Welcome, everybody. Howard, John Mayen in Uptown Greenwood. Tom Carroll, Chris Cox, Stan Spivey, the coach, in the house. And we apologize first and foremost. We thought we were going to be able to come to you yesterday from Hooters down there in Augusta for a little bit of golf. And we'll get into a little golf today as well. But things didn't turn out. They were packed. And the place that we were promised ended up, we didn't want to take any money away from the waitresses.
We can't do that. But, we got our own table. But there again, if you ran the extension cords, that's tripping hazard.
We're
going to try.
We're going to try again on Thursday for sure. We've been told I'll take table down, and we'll even set up outside of John Daly if we have to.
Yeah, right behind him where you were standing. Yeah.
We might ought to carry a tent because of the chance of rain there Thursday, the only day for rain at the Masters.
Yep. And we're going to get to interview Stan to Cordoza, so he'll love it.
Oh, yeah. Cordoza, too, was there.
She came at me, and I looked, and I was like.
Yeah. Funny part of that is Clemson, Carolina football game this year, we had the grandson down on the sidelines, and we were standing there, and here comes Camilla walking down the sideline in dress clothes. Now, you don't blend in when you're 6'8 and female with that much hair. I'm sorry. Now, even at a football game down on, you don't blend in. You stand out.
All right. Well, we got a lot to talk about, and of course, we're going to talk about the Gamecocks here to start off with. First and foremost, what a big win, 87-75 up there in Cleveland, Ohio, in the championship over Iowa. And, guys, when you look at this one all the way around, and Chris and I said it when we were watching it at the beginning, that first quarter was really the only blemish that they had the entire game. After that, they outscored Iowa in each of the three quarters after that, and overcame a 7-point deficit rather quickly.
They did. I was more impressed at who took the shots early and often, and that was Kate Martin. She came out and said, "All right, I'm going to get my 7 really quick." I think that was the first 7, right? With Kate Martin, and it didn't have to be, little squirrel cat running around. And Caitlin Clark, who's a great player, by the way. And I think Dawn addressed that very well after that game was over. Said that she's probably the best just player that she's ever really played against. She was the GOAT, and I still say, Miss Pearl Moore, I'm pulling for you, Francis Marion. She lives in Florence now, by the way.
I wish these national guys would get that right.
Yeah.
And I mean, every time you hear it, it's,
Well, here's the thing.
Basketball scoring leader,
When she said it, she's played 4 more games now since she set that record or more.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And she's still not over to the full.
That's what I'm saying. She's not where Miss Pearl Moore is either. Yeah. But there's another one standing that's in California that has more than Pearl Moore. And the grandson of that lady is challenging. He's the one that's challenging and everything. So, I'll give her all the credit in the world, but I just don't think that you can break a record from different areas when the game has changed and evolved so much. Like 3-point line. Miss Pearl Moore didn't have it. The lady out there didn't have it. Pistol Pete didn't have it.
Number of games that you play.
Yeah, that you play. I mean, so you got to set it like that. I mean, there's other girls that looking up and they saying, I'm going to get that record right there. And it could be, I'm going to tell you something. There could be a couple of Gamecocks coming in or a couple that we already got that could come close.
Well, it depends. And a lot of this, I don't want to take anything away from Clark. But at the same time, her coach had to let her play that way.
Yeah.
If you want to put up a 30-foot 3, you put it up.
What was that yesterday?
The rest of you girls go rebound. How many coaches are going to do that? I think a lot of, and you made mention to it off the air, a lot of these coaches saw what happened this year with South Carolina. They kind of flew under the radar, but then you look at that line in the box score and it says bench scoring.
39-0.
That was the game yesterday.
Every game, that was a game. South Carolina was, there were games where South Carolina outscored the other team with just their bench. So now these other coaches are saying, I need to go deeper than
– change my philosophy.
Instead of having the 6th man of the year, we're looking at who's 8th, 9th. Yeah. and yesterday, prime example, Tessa Johnson's probably 8 at best. Might be 9 on that team coming off the bench. She may be number 9 because you got Full Wiley and – Fagan and these other girls in front of, I don't know, but
Well, let's talk about Tessa and what she was able to do. 19 points altogether. I mean, she had, you know, the game of her life. And who would have thought a freshman would be able to do this? She also ended up with, what, 4 rebounds in the process. You know, stayed out of foul trouble. Yeah, had 3 assists to go along with it. Had to, well, she didn't have any blocks, but she did have a steal.
Well, it might have been a steal. And say she did at times during the game when Raven did go off the floor for a few minutes. Tessa drew the assignment of Clark. And, you know, after the first quarter, Caitlin had 18 in the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
3 more quarters, 30 more minutes of basketball, and she has 12 points. Somebody was doing something right.
Thing for me with Tessa as we watch it, Raven Johnson was 1 for 11.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And 1 for 2 from 0 for 4 from 3. And that's where it had to be Tessa to step up because Raven just wasn't happy. Poole Wally could have done it. Poole Wally ends up with 19-4. She had 19 points overall, though, didn't she?
No,
she only had 9 points.
Okay, 9 points. 4 rebounds, 1 assist. But she was 4 for 10. So you had to have a Tessa Johnson step up. And like Stan's been saying all year, somebody's got to know they got a role they got to take, come back and get it back in the game. So, I mean, congrats. Like I said, Pow, I mean,
she had 3 threes, yeah. I know.
Yeah, she was 3 for 4,
yeah.
4 for 7 for the game. But, I mean, those 14 points, those were crucial as we were looking at. Because you missed out because we were in a pretty much – it wasn't an Iowa crowd. It was a Dak Blaine Georgia Bulldog crowd is what it was. And we had a table of 4 ladies that kept it as loud as that whole restaurant did because them gals wasn't backing down. They were like Pat McAfee doing his thing.
They were.
They were loud. They were proud. And like I said, at the end, Tom goes out to see John right there daily. And I had to stop and high-five all them and take a picture with them. So anyway, they showed out. And that's what it takes, man. People call them tribes. I mean, Dawn's got her tribe, and it's all over the country now. So like I'm like Stan now. This team's going to be – they're only going to get better and better. I mean, I don't see – nobody, even if they're with the portal, they're not going nowhere. They like where they're at. They like their coach, and that's big, unlike other programs that we'll talk about.
Well, I know we were talking to Stephanie last night after we got home, and she had to work yesterday.
Ooh.
During the game, so she's working. Had a group from Michigan come in that were huge Iowa fans, and basically Stephanie said they were the same way as this crowd, y'all. Talk. They were loud and proud in the first quarter. But I think they got reminded often that you better look at what state you're staying in right now.
I didn't get to have the fun I wanted to have. Plus, when I was with him, if I'd been with Willie, it'd have been different. But I had a crowd behind me, and he kept bumping my chair, and I'm all good with that, man. But like I said, they started getting, look at the queen. She's taking off. And I finally had had enough. By the time the third quarter had started and we had made the miraculous comeback that we made and gone up and into the fourth when we were going to see it, I started to just turn around and say, hey, man, where's the queen? But like I said, you got to take things as it goes, man. But it's a good – and like I said, I'll eat all the crow in the world if it gets the championship. I'm never a guy that's going to take – I'll take the field every day over a team. I go with percentages, but I guess I got to maybe rethink my philosophy with this team here because they're going to be better next year. I just felt like, and you're right, Stan, I felt like last year was more mature, more senior-laden.
Yep.
We should have done more, and we didn't. And to take a year that was supposed to be rebounding year, by the way,
yeah,
and go, and that's what Coach said. She says, I never would have dreamed that this team, because through summertime, I was getting ready to strangle a couple.
Well,
and she was talking about Poole Wally.
She said, you know, they were late for practices. They wouldn't return her text. Now, this is Dawn Staley, the head basketball coach that just gave you a scholarship, and she's texting you. She's expecting a response.
Well, like I said.
They wouldn't text. She said, but she had to take it upon herself. She kept trying to compare this team to last year's team and treat this team like she did. Last year's team was, like you say, senior-laden, experienced. They came in, you could have heard a pin drop in the locker room because they were getting focused for what they had to do. This team comes in, they're singing and
they
dancing.
Lose.
And
they're loosey-goosey, huh?
You know, but they trusted Dawn. You know, they trusted her. And that trust showed up even at the Tennessee game, the closest game they had all year. And when she's standing over there telling Camilla to shoot the blankety blank from three, and Camilla perfect form and just knocks it in, you know.
There's a lot of trust in Dawn having to adjust to another team as well, because she could have very easily gone off on them and tried to change it, and it wouldn't have been the same team.
But she realized.
Yeah. She realized during the summer what team she had. And that's why I say, all props in the world, Coach. You got this one.
Well, she said in one meeting late in the season, the coaches were just meeting like they usually do. No players around. And Dawn said, you know, we actually said out loud, this team could take us to the Final Four. And it was just like the light bulb came on in the coaches' heads just how good this team could be. They still have not reached their potential. Now, as close as we saw all year was probably the North Carolina game in the second round where they beat North Carolina by 45-plus. That was probably as close as you could see as a perfect game for this team. But that shows you what is – and I think we made mention of it on that, the podcast after those games. This team was sending a message to everybody out there. If you're going to come play us,
take notice.
You better be ready to play because we're coming.
And one thing I noticed with this game, though, was how physical it was.
It was.
Carolina, the only real physical games that they had was against LSU that was this intense and meant something, I guess, to go along with that. But, I mean, I thought they handled the intensity very well, particularly when Iowa went to that 3-2 zone. I mean, they fought tooth and nail to get those rebounds.
And a lot of it, you know, I think this – being as young a team as this was, Coach Staley preaching and teaching this team, don't let the officials get under your skin. You know, okay, you may get fouled, it may be called. You're going to get fouled and it's not going to be called. Don't start complaining to the officials about it. Don't start making all these gestures. Just get back and let's get the next play going.
And that's what we saw.
And she drummed that in their head from last June all the way through to the game yesterday. There were a few times that, you know, Ashley Watkins looked at the official and said, what? But the official didn't realize that that girl could jump out of the gym and was probably the best athlete on both teams.
And we saw a lot of pulling back on rebounds, on offensive and defensive rebounds, just pulling back. Not by the hair, barely. Nothing Cruella would do, but just like pulling back. But the thing I liked was she even said on one of her – I think it was this morning on Today's show. She said, how did you – and it was what you just emphasized. Is how did you keep the girls in their right frame of mind knowing that the queen was going to get her calls? Because if she doesn't, she's going to –
she's
temper tantrum.
Bless him.
About every little thing. And there were times Tom and I were just sitting out there. We were just like, man, come on. It's got to be called both ways. And then you could see Dawn just, she was getting mad.
Yeah.
And then she realized once the lead built back up, that's fine. And she looked at the official one time and she's like, you're good. And she just said, play your game. And it's like, that's when that foot hit that pedal and boom.
Off they went.
Well, that came from the coaching job that she did with them that, look, you know, and we said it before on this podcast that no other team that South Carolina would play would be as big, as strong, as quick, as fast, 1 through 8 or 1 through 9. You might be the same 3, maybe. 4, if you're lucky. But, and with them being that big and that long, they're going to get fouled by the littler, by the small, littler, that ain't, that's not right. By the smaller people, and it's not going to be called. And it's just that, you know, you got to learn to play through it. And this team did that for the majority of time. Now, we did have the one, and we're going to call it the incident with LSU at the tournament.
At the end of the game.
Where Cardoza kind of lost it a little bit. But she learned from that. She learned from that. That was a teaching moment. And it wasn't just for Cardoza. It was for everybody else on that team and on that bench. they learned from that. And Dawn was very gracious and immediately after the game apologized to everybody, and this will not happen again. But at the same time, I'm fed up with the officiating. I'm getting ready to go off. So be aware, officials, you know, that kind of deal.
She handled it the right way, whereas Cruella did not. And Cruella has still not addressed it the way it needs to be addressed. But look, Tom and I were talking, I don't know if you saw it or not, the governor of the state of Louisiana is involved in it now. And he has a problem with kneeling and not going out for anthems. His solution is state scholarships.
Yep.
So everybody, of course, on Cruella's side and the whole LSU school and everything else are against him now. And it says, and as a matter of fact, I don't know who it was, but it was somebody from the team quoted out, I guess we need a new governor. This is what you need. You need a new coach. You need to have somebody you can respect to play under, because I'm telling you, your daughters wouldn't have played under. I promise you mine wouldn't have played under, and I know yours wouldn't have played under either. But like I said, that's the change that needs to take place, and that's where I get on the commissioner of the SEC. He could have done something a long time. Right after this happened, he could have done something about it, and he didn't do it. He still got time to get in there and do it. But I was amazed that a governor has to step up to get anything noticed about it.
And one of the comments that I saw was, the governor's got no control over scholarships. Well, he may not have control over the scholarships, but guess what he does have control over?
The funding for
the public money that goes to that school.
And it's a lot of it.
Yeah.
And so, that was another mention. There's a lot of public money that goes to LSU. So. Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, again, congratulations to USC, 10th team in Division I history to go along and go undefeated at 38-0. They join UConn, who did it six times.
You know.
You got Baylor in the 2011-2012 season, Tennessee in the 97-98 year.
And that then
you had, yeah, and Texas from 85-86 did it there as a program as well. So South Carolina now tied for third most titles, only trailing UConn and Tennessee in that one. And another accolade, congrats to Dawn Staley. She becomes the fifth coach to win three national championships. She joins Geno, also Pat Summitt, Tara Van Derver, and then Carrillo as well, Kim Mulkey.
Yeah, I was going to say, I forgot about her one at LSU and Carrillo. And since we're talking about Tennessee, they have a new coach, and I had written it down. But I don't have
Caldwell.
Caldwell from Marshall. And that's kind of a surprise, because we felt like it would be a former alum. And then I'm sitting there talking to Tom yesterday, and we're checking the sceneries out, or I'm checking the sceneries out, and it hits me all of a sudden. I looked her name back up, Kelly Harper. She was an alumni. So what were really you expecting from her? For one, she's an alumni. They wanted the girl off the TV from Tennessee that's in the commentary. Now, they wanted her to apply for the job, but you just fired an alumni. I just don't know the philosophy up there right now.
Well,
and you're going with a younger girl, so maybe that's it.
Well, I think the athletic director is not an alumni of Tennessee. So I think he's seeing, okay, we need to go a different direction. We need to get away from this Pat Summitt loyalty, former coach, former player. That was in the past. The game has changed. We need somebody to come in here, and we're going to be willing to give you time to make that change. And let's see what happens. I mean, it's they lost Rekia Jackson. She's graduated, so she won't be back. Can she keep the rest of the team there? Who does she bring in? What is she ready as a coach to compete in the SEC in women's basketball when you're going to be facing South Carolina, LSU, Ole Miss, Texas? These teams
challenge right away,
and it's going to be and the same thing with the Kentucky job. Is Brooks ready to bring Kentucky to where he took? Now, he did. He built Virginia Tech. There's no doubt. And he's already, I think, the girl from Australia has already said, hit the portal, I'm coming with you, coach.
He's got four of them, by the way, now. As of today, he's got four of his players. Well, I think that team's going to be fine.
But are they ready for SEC play?
And that's the key.
And that's going to be the whole thing. It is a different world over there. I mean, ACC is a quality league, don't get me wrong, but, you know, you're going to be playing LSU and Carolina Tech. You're going to be playing these teams back to back to back to back to back.
Stan, how long is it before Doan has a women's facility to play at?
If she wanted, she could probably have it. Could probably start on it tomorrow. That could be into revitalization. You know,
they got
that big revitalization right there around the arena now. But here's the thing. Colonial Life holds 18,000 now. Okay, this past year they averaged over 16,000.
Right.
So do you need to build a bigger arena?
No, that's what I'm saying.
You know, do you need to build a 20,000-seat arena just for the women?
That's what Brooks was talking about, because the one that they have built at Kentucky now is like 14,500.
Yeah.
And he said for women's basketball, he wanted to be he wants the big atmosphere, but he wants to fill the seats with the people.
Yeah.
And so I guess I was asking you, if she was to build one, CLA holds this.
She'd fill it.
That's what I'm saying. But if CLA already holds this, what would you want as far as her attendance at that? That would be left up to Dawn too. But I mean, we've all been to the practice facility for football. You know,
Dawn ain't gonna want to have to move all the statues that they're putting up around it. So.
She'd be closer.
Just move the men over to the old one, to Frank McGuire.
Just
move
the men out. And
don't even bring back the old McGuire, man. I love that place.
The thing about it, you're going to be looking now.
Standard.
Now you've got another banner you've got to hang up. You got to find somewhere else to put another trophy or two or three. It'll be three now. So, you know, you got to find a place to put all them trophies. So. That might take out some of the seating capacity. So you've got to be careful.
I just thought the concept in Kentucky was cool.
Yeah,
it is.
I feel bad for the young lady that got fired.
I think
that was her dream.
This is something that you're going to see a major emphasis been put onto women's sports. And it's not just basketball, but it's the softball, it's the gymnastics, it's everything. You're going to start seeing upgrades in all the female sports facilities, whether it's the softball field or the soccer field, whatever, you know, you're going to start seeing some drastic change, much like we saw with the football stadiums. We've seen it with the baseball stadiums. You're going to see it now.
All right, speaking of changes, congrats again to PC Ladies Basketball. First time they've ever made the NCAA tournament. They won the Big South for the first time as well. And then Alora Sharp gets offered a job from App State and takes it. So she is making a big change going over there to Appalachian State, as part of that national search that was there. Presbyterian's athletic director, Dee Nichols, has her hands full now trying to find a replacement.
That'll be a tough job and a tough field, but there again, I mean, the difference is now than some other ones. This is the coach that's moving somewhere else, so more than likely a player may go to. Sun Belt's fun.
But here's the thing, too, though. This coach showed that a school as small as PC can win and win at the next level. I'm talking win tournament games. She did that. So can they get somebody that's willing to come in there and do it? You know it can be done now, so we just got to hope that they can get a quality coach in there. And
she recruited well.
Yeah.
She did. She only had 7 wins back in 2018. That was her first season.
I mean,
to go from that to where she is this year is remarkable.
And see, here's the thing I think we could look at as far as, like, state. I mean, Dawn's going to get every coach of the year there is. But if you were to do a state coach of the year this year, Dawn won national. But, I mean, what she did just for the 1 year or a couple years at PC is phenomenal. And she's going to one of the bigger – App State's one of the bigger schools in the Sun Belt, right?
Yeah.
I think it's a great move, but like you say, that Miss AD over there, you got a job. And luckily there's some really good coaches around here. I don't know if you go to a high school guy and say, hey, man, you young enough, come on here and let's see what we can do. But it'll be if it stays intact, I imagine you're going to have some coaches call that are not in the game right now.
Well, you may not have a head coach. You may have an assistant coach at one of the bigger schools, with Clemson losing their coach, Tennessee losing Kelly Harper, the up at Kentucky. I mean, you've got three major schools.
Those are major coaches too, in my family.
But
that are huge.
You're not going after not those a man, coaches.
Not a man.
You're going after their assistants.
Yeah.
The ones that are looking for a job. The ones that are say, well, I was just an assistant at Tennessee, but I can go down there and be the head coach.
I'm thinking, though, one of the things when you do take a job and you leave a place, most coaches have somebody already in mind. It could be a coach under her. And during that whole process, that might be what said there may be a coach at PC already there that's ready to step up and take the next step. That was one of the assistant head coaches or whatever that you have. But like I said, she left it better than she found it. Is that a good way to leave that one with PC?
Yep.
So.
All right, so that brings us to the game that's going to be happening tonight, guys. And I, you know, you look at it, number one Purdue taking on number one UConn. Got the last two number one seeds that end up making it all the way on here. And, of course, the big matchup is what's going to be happening under the paint with Zach Edey. And then you look at Donovan Klingon to go along with it. And we've seen what, you know, Edey is, 7'4". Klingon only gives up 2 inches on him, not a lot.
7'2".
But Klingon's going to be the better defender that Edey has faced. And we saw the trouble that Edey had with turnovers earlier on Saturday. I think he may, you know, if he decides to bring that ball down, he may have his hands full. Klingon had how many block shots on Saturday? I mean,
a lot.
It's unbelievable. Hold on, it's right here.
But, you know, the thing is, too, I feel like – that Edey is, he's 7'4", and he's a big body. And that 7'4", big body has kind of morphed him into my feet's in concrete. He doesn't have good footwork. He, you know, the big thing going into the tournament was are the officials going to call 3 seconds on him because he just like
he doesn't move.
He can't
sit there, and it's like his feet's nailed in there. Whereas the Klingon, he seems to be same. I mean, he's 7'2", and he's got a big body on him too. Now, not quite as big as Edey, but he's still a big body. He's not a 7'2" beanpole, but he's got a whole lot better footwork. Seems to be a little more fluid with his movements. I think he's gonna give Edey all Edey wants.
I think he's going to be the best matchup. I'm not going to say that's the one I'm looking for. I'm looking at the guard play with Castle.
And Newton,
of course, at 15 a game. And, of course, I told y'all the other week, I love Fletcher Loyal for Purdue. Purdue cost me last year, and I'm looking at this now. It's 54% to 49% for Connecticut. So Vegas is going that way with that. I just love Klingon. I don't know why I like that name. It was the other day you weren't here. We were at Michelle's, and I said, Klingon. I didn't think he realized who I was talking about. And he told me we were riding to Augusta, and he's like, that's why you made that Star Wars reference. I was like, yeah. He's kind of got pointy ears too. But, dude, here's the thing. Matt Painter's a really good basketball coach. But last year he had a really good basketball team, and he let a really young UConn team come in. And they're young again. I mean, this team's not – they've only got – Castle who's the only senior on that team. So, you know, you got your Freeman, you got – for Purdue, you got Frank Mitchell. You got some of these guys that are really good. I can't go against Hurley, man. I just can't. I love Matt Painter, but I got to go with Connecticut just watching what they did last year.
Well, I think Connecticut's got the better guard play overall. And I think Connecticut's bench is going to be, much like we saw yesterday with the Carolina-Iowa game, is going to be the better, deeper bench. You'll see Connecticut have more bench points than you will Purdue.
Well, and Fletcher Loyer is streaky.
He is streaky.
I mean, very much so.
I like the kid, but he is streaky. I will be pulling for Purdue, I'll tell you that now. I'm not a big Danny Hurley. I like Bobby, but – I heard some of the states not playing, by the way. So, but I respect what Dan's done there.
Yeah.
Because I can remember who was the former player that coached before him, the tall black guy, Ollie something Ollie or something. But anyway, it should be a really good game. It's a late. I'm sure it's a late night game tonight. So
9:20 it gets underway. Yeah, so
it's all right, man. I won't be watching it anyway because it's probably on. No, it's probably on CBS, but.
Yeah, did you know this is one of the rare Final Fours that has number one versus number one?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you go back 2 years ago, Baylor outdid Gonzaga. Both of those were number one. 17, you had North Carolina taking on Gonzaga. Duke and Wisconsin in 2009. 2008, you had Kansas and Memphis. Florida and Ohio State in 2007. North Carolina and Illinois in 5. In 99, it was UConn and Duke. North Carolina and Michigan in 93. And in 82, you had North Carolina and Georgetown.
And the celebration will be at 2 o'clock today at Colonial
Life. It is. I got on Facebook from Chloe Kitts, and I'm like, what? So I had to look at my thing again, but anyway.
So, yeah, Columbia's going to be nuts down there with all the celebrations.
Well, you guys think everybody's going to be outside for the eclipse anyway. So
yeah,
that's true.
It is going to be crazy at CLA. They're going to probably be trying to sneak back in to get out of the eclipse or whatever. Which, yeah, I don't have my glasses. I don't know if y'all brought y'all's little eclipse glasses. I can't see no way, so I'm going to look up there and see if I might correct it. I'm gonna go.
Burn his retinas back into
focus. Bring them back into play, man. That wet DMD or whatever they call it or whatever. But it, like I said, it's a one. They had a little kid on today. She won to interview Coach Staley. She was a young girl. They were from Connecticut. And she was like, well, my mom liked Connecticut, but Coach, I've always liked you. She was a young 12-year-old girl. And she said, well, what are you doing at the Today Show? She said, we're going to the, and whatever it was, it's like 30 letters in it, and it's where they have the big satellites and everything. And Dawn said, well, what is that? Can I ask what that is? And she said, oh, yeah, a percomatorium is where you go to look at such and such. Well, you won't need your glasses, will you? She said, I got them, though. She said, but I plan on being inside because I want to look up through the telescope. And she said, well, you said you want an interview. What you got for me is a part of the question. She says, how young do you recruit? So, I mean.
Seventh grade.
You got to think, Connecticut, remember? Yeah. Gino, RM, man, he throws them out really young there. But like I said, all in all, man, everything about today has been about Coach Staley. It's well-deserved. I eat my crow well. I would have much rather come in here and it be like it is. And if I'd been the one guy that got on the radio and said, there ain't no dag-blame way this team can ever lose a game. Like last year, we lost to Iowa. But I'd much rather be staying, got the props on me this time.
Clyde's looking for you. So.
That's fine. I got Clyde, too. He better have me some chicken and macaroni if you want me to come up there. But, man, can you believe, like, it's Monday. You know what today is? It's firing day. I texted you last night, and when I saw it, when I texted you, it wasn't a done deal.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Within 1 hour, it was a done deal, and I was like, I'm not texting him at 12:30 or 1.
Yeah, I was by then.
But anyway, I have done this all night long, but think about this job. It starts out at Michelle's Pizza with poaching, as we will call it. USC poaches Arkansas. After the AD said, I don't know how long he's going to be here anyway, so USC said, well, that's our right to go get him and take him. Okay, now, Arkansas does the next natural thing, and they poach.
And they went after Calipari.
Who's poaching next?
Well, Kentucky's going to be looking for a new head coach, but, and they're going to be coming after Carolina's was going to happen.
No, I don't think it'll be him. I got three names. I want to just talk to you about those three names really fast. If a guy like Rick Pitino can coach at 71 years old at St. John's, why can't he go back and coach at SEC at his old school at Kentucky? If not Rick Pitino, how about his son? And then there's one I just threw out of the woodwork. What about a guy like Billy Donovan that's at Chicago Cubs right now? I mean, Bulls right now, who's not having a great year with the Bulls but has won three or four national championships in Florida. Those are some guys that I would look at. I mean, I know that Coach Paris will be in the
list
up to do it. But I mean, like I said, if Pacino can coach at 71 at St. John's, which Big East high, it's still kind of a high platform of a conference. I mean, that might be the call. I say, hey man, they love you here. Because
I don't think Kentucky fans love him. I think they had a falling out with him. They may have grown back into him. But,
well, if they don't like him, they won't like the son.
And it was the same way with Calipari, I think. Calipari had been there 15 years, and it was time for him to go.
Well, he saw the writing on the wall.
He saw the writing on the wall. I feel like there's a connection between him and somebody within the Arkansas administration.
Oh, the Tyson family.
And pick up the phone and the say, family. Hey, this heated seat I got over here in Kentucky, I don't like.
Yeah, that was.
I want to cut the heat off under my seat. You offer everything that Kentucky. You got a rabid fan base. You're in a smaller setting, so to speak. state, you know, got booster clubs all over Arkansas. It's been proven in the past by a plethora of coaches that you can win, and you can win national championships in Arkansas, but you're not expected to win every year, and there's a difference.
All right, this is for Stan, being a football coach. With transfer portal and the way it works, we've already seen 1, 2, 3, how many coaches go and transfer players go. If you're the AD of Kentucky, I think you got to look at it a little bit differently now. I think you almost have to go to your team and say,
who do you want?
Who do you want? Because I'm going to show you what I got right here. These are 9 players, freshmen and sophomores. 6 are McDonald's All-Americans. Grant Derbyshire didn't play this year because of a knee injury, sophomore. Justin Edwards, 10 points a game. Freshman, Philadelphia, 6'8". Joey Hart, 6'5", guard, freshman. He didn't play this year because of an injury. Ugana Omasio, who we did see at Carolina, he played against us, 7 foot, 247. There's 4 players on this list here that are over 6'10". And then you get to Adal Theo, who had 8 points a game, sophomore. DJ Wagner was the player of the SEC tournament this year, 10 points a game. But more than that, 10 rebounds a game almost. 6'4", a guard out of New Jersey. Reed Shepard, who took the blame for the loss. Young kid, freshman, 6'3", guard. Then Z, our boy Z, Ivanisic, you know, 5 points a game. He's 7'2", out of Croate. Rob Dillingham, who was player of the year on that team, 15.5 points a game, freshman out of Hickory. Jordan Burks, freshman out of 6'8", freshman out of Alabama. Aaron Brashaw, freshman out of New Jersey, 7'1". So 5 players, I mean, you almost got to go with that approach because you know that that Calipari is going to take somebody. But does he take everybody?
Well, I don't think he's going to take everybody because this team – did not really get along.
Yeah, well.
This team did not play as a team. They would not accept the coaching that Calipari was trying to get to them as far as, anybody can shoot the lights out of it. And we saw it with Alabama. Alabama could shoot the lights out of it. The closer it got to the end of the season and start getting into tournament time, Nate Oates says, guys, time out. From now on, at practice, we're not shooting the ball. We're practicing defense because defense is the only way we're going to win a championship. You're not going to outshoot these teams that we're going to be playing. And he changed the narrative. Kentucky Calipari tried to do it, and they ended up getting beat by – who was that, Chris?
He did beat Kentucky.
you know, in the first round, round. I think there's a mixed match with coaching style or philosophy, player philosophy, whatever you want to call it. You're liable to see those players scattered to 5 or 6 different schools.
And that's where that's the reason I ask you, and I want you to tone in too, but this is 10 players that are All-Americans. We always talk about McDonald's All-Americans and Carolina's had theirs. We still got them coming in, and they're going to continue to come in. At what point as an AD you can't say, well, the coach is the one doing the recruiting? And we'll find out more from this because –
we'll find out who's loyal to Calipari.
There's 5 that Musselman have that have already gone that Calipari could have just picked up. What's his name? Brooks. That was that's Arkansas that tore his knee this year. That's going to be – he transfers out. I'm glad you said Nate Oates because that is the top name on the Kentucky – searching list right now is Nate Oates. So if I'm Alabama today and I really like my coach, do what I got to do to keep him. I mean, we've already done what we need to do. I mean, here's another question, though. Calipari was making 8.5 at Kentucky, and he's going to take a different job for the same amount of money? That tells you how much he wanted out.
Well,
there's not near as much pressure.
Hit that button on the seat had went from warm to hot. And he knew it was just a matter of time. He knew the fan base wasn't behind him. The administration wasn't behind him.
When everyone the
players,
kids, that's bad.
The players didn't care if they played for him or not. They would just soon have somebody else. So I'm going to pack my bags. I'm going somewhere where I feel like at least I'm wanted.
Well, I don't know, though. I mean, the reason he's going to end up that he did take the job is because his relationship with the Tyson family, who when we see John Daly, we need to ask him who Tyson family is. He'll tell you because he knows very well. That was a major one that got little John to Arkansas other than his dad playing there. But I Coach Ferris, I'm just going to go ahead and say it now. I've already told you to try to get the kids up at College of Charleston. There's 10 kids right there. If you bring me three, buddy, we're going to be back in that championship. I'm telling you. If you can pull three of these, a kid from Hickory, which we know that Herbert Davis will probably go after. But this, to me, this is probably the biggest, one of the bigger coaching hiring that we're going to have in a while because Coach K named his successor in Shire. Herbert Davis just walked in the door and they gave it to him. But this is going to be a huge search. I mean, I'd like to see how many names are going to be on the total list when it's done. But like I said, I got about 10 myself. So, but I really like Billy Donovan Ford. I like Nate Oakes. I don't like him as a person. But if I'm Alabama today, Stan, how much? Mm-hmm. Because I couldn't believe this. He's only making like $4 million at Alabama. That's a little surprising because he's been a really good coach for, what, 3 years now, definitely. And well, he's taken freshmen, sophomores, juniors, and a couple seniors and done it with what his style of play.
All right, let's move on from basketball to the football side of everything because Clemson had their spring game. The orange-white game ended up taking place on Saturday at 1 o'clock. 27-12, the orange over the white. But it was the freshman who stood out, particularly on the offensive side. Trent Pierman, who is the third-string quarterback, comes in. He plays both orange and white, ends up putting up phenomenal numbers, looks absolutely huge. You look at the wide receiver in Wesco, had a great diving catch in the end zone from Pierman as well. That was there. And then on the defensive side, Wade Wazow, Sammy Brown, both those guys had, I think it was 8 tackles. Each had a tackle for a loss to go along with that. The defense just overall, 11 sacks, 21 tackles for a loss. But keep in mind that, you know, everything was mixed here. You had ones mixed with twos and threes to kind of even things out as that went. But for the most part, when you listen to what Coach Dabo Swinney had to say here, this was a good turnout and, you know, a young team. When you look at the freshmen that are coming in, here's what he had to say after the spring game when he met with the media.
So just a great day, man. Really beautiful to see, again, so many people come out and give us the opportunity, again, to create a game feel when you split your team and you got guys getting a chance to start and, you know, sometimes things that you've seen in practice that all of a sudden they get in the, you know, a young guy like Wesco, for example, early on, you know, he missed a block, he had a poor release, you know, it's like, but then he kind of settled down. And I think, you know, you need moments like this to prepare. Again, that's the reason why people have preseason games and scrimmages and things like that against other people. So it's a very meaningful day. You know, obviously, you know, you're not going to take a whole lot schematically out of a spring game and things like that, but just from a personnel standpoint, to give a lot of guys opportunity, you know, it'll help them grow, help them develop, and help us evaluate them a little bit further. So a good day. Got a chance to see a lot of guys, you know, flash and make some plays, and it was fun. You know, obviously, we had some guys. We held Brandy, held Maffa, held RJ, held Barrett. Those guys have played a lot of snaps. And we really want to evaluate the guys behind them a little bit more, or expose them a little bit to bring them along like we need. And then we obviously have some guys, you know, injury-wise, that are different stages of their, you know, return to play protocol. So, but all in all, a good spring. It'll be a great spring if we go do the work that we need to do this summer. You know, because it all has to build. You know, all in all, you hate to see it come to an end because this is the best part, being with the players every day and just the process of meetings and practice and review and all that stuff. So now we got a good 3 weeks of training coming up. It's a big 3 weeks for us from a strength and conditioning standpoint and really setting the tone for the summer. You know, as you all know, we get out of school early around here, so we got 15 days of class, 3 weeks, and then it's finals, and they're out of here for a little while before we really get back going with our skills and drills the latter part of May. And so a lot of work to do these next few weeks.
So there you have Dabo Swinney, his opening comments after the spring game that were there. For me, I wanted to hear him talk about who was going to take that possession wide receiver possession spot, that slot spot that's been so popular, who that could possibly be. He didn't mention anything in it, but Stratko, to me, could be that guy that ends up filling that role.
So where, if he does that, where does Wesco go?
Wesco will go to
the
outside.
On the side? Okay. Yeah. My thing I wanted to see was Sammy Brown, any rushing yards?
No, they didn't put him in.
Come on, man.
Well, he had over, almost 2,000 yards.
That's what I'm saying.
Year, senior year, but.
I'm telling you, man, at some point in time, he would be a guy put in the backfield a little bit, just take the burn on the rest of them. We talked about Perriman and how good this kid is. Where did he play college? I mean, high school. Up the street. He was a Daniel boy. He's been with that system for basically as long as he's been alive. He's known that Clemson offense as a quarterback. I'm going to tell you, I really wanted to see what you did. He pushed pretty well. I want to see if he can put a little bit of that pressure to bring Cade to the quarterback. He's got to be, Stan.
Yeah.
Pyramid's the guy that maybe can bring Cade Covenant to where he needs to be to be the quarterback at Clemson. I think he can. But like I said, West Coast is going to step up. But that's going to be huge for you. And you had one that didn't even play because of an injury that's an even better wide receiver than West Coast, I've heard. He's going to be ready for football season, but he's going to be out until probably July, August, something like that, when it's time to get back. But he's missing valuable time. But all in all, I mean, I went back last night, see if I could find it. All I got was NC State again. So, again, I'll say that I don't think NC State's going to be a team to worry about this year, but they always have a good team, get you into a bowl, and so anyway.
Yeah. The thing that was also noticeable was the kickers. and Gunn struggled again. I mean, he has missed from 55, he missed from 37, he didn't make a 36 and 28-yarder, but the new guy, Nolan Hauser, 48-yarder he nailed, 29-yarder he nailed.
Tommy, you got to let that go.
I'm trying.
You're thinking about a UFL kicker that kicked in 262s.
Yeah, why can't
– And you just and he hadn't played since high school. But I still, though, man, last year, to make a call to Charleston and tell a kid, say, man, come on back up here, that's hard to do, Stan.
Yeah.
I mean, look, Charleston, like, if you don't stand outside in your yard and kick field goals, man, you fish. You play golf. You don't worry about that. He didn't stay in shape to play ball. He was fixing to go to New York to be a Wall Street exec, I think, or something like that.
Exactly.
But now the other kid just kicking against him. I mean, if it is what it is, that's your job to go get. So yeah. you spent all winter and all summer now. Well, up to spring now, you'll spend summertime kicking balls all over the place. And there might be a third guy emerged from that because there's talk about a soccer player that we hadn't heard about yet.
I've heard rumors of it.
I mean, I've heard the rumors, that, and they've come from like Channel 7 News. But anyway, I'm not going to hold him to it either. But Igwe, or whatever his name was, a heck of a kicker for y'all. I remember he got the Gamecocks a couple of times. But like I said, if you come down to, it's almost like we always talk about free throws and fouls and late in the game. Take care of your business, score your points, and like I've always said, man, don't ever leave it to the mental head of a kicker, man. Them cats they out there on Dream Street. Take care of business, win your game. I don't know who Carolina's going to have this year either kicking, so we'll have to see.
But for the first time, I think, since in a long time, I think Clemson finally has a kick returner as well, and Aiden Swanson, he averaged 46 yards and 3 boots. I mean, that's
all right,
pretty
now,
good.
All right, break it down for me now. Who coached Orange this time? West Alabama?
No, Godwin coached the White.
Okay, so Riley coached the – okay. Yep. And so, okay. All right. So, and that's what I liked about Stan. I like that aspect because you're asking Garrett Riley to coach defense part of the time as well. And then you're asking Godwin to – that's why I thought we might have had some Sammy Brown runs just because he's like, that guy's big and I love him on defense. But all in all, I mean, if you are a Tiger fan, you got to be excited about what you saw. Simply, Stan's excited to see that there's actually a couple of receivers that are going to be pretty good this year. But I'm more interested to see the pressure – that I think that Pyramid can put on him. It wasn't really like that last year.
Yeah, and we didn't really stretch the field in the spring game either. I mean, the longest was a 39-yarder, and that's not – I mean
– But, Tom, last year, 39 would have been a blessing.
It would have been.
That's what I was getting ready to say. Last year, you didn't stretch the field at all, and we talked about it last fall. You know, Clemson, where's the big-time receiver that Clemson's used to having? And nobody was stepping into that role. And then we said, well, we can put a little bit of it on Klubnik being a young quarterback. Maybe don't want to push him to try to make throws that he's uncomfortable making. I'm like you, Chris. It's time to grow up, put the big boy britches on now.
It was on him now.
It's your team.
Yeah.
It's your team, but you got to go out there and win it.
You got to be, and that was the one thing that I never could fault Spencer on, because he did that.
Yeah.
I mean, he that was really, and I'm not, like I said, I'm not a big Spencer guy, but he did what he did. And I think it's sad that we're still waiting to see if he doesn't get drafted. Has he signed with an agent yet or not? Because they're still talking Columbia about he can come back for his, what is it, a COVID year. That puts a damper on football practice right now for me, because you need to have Sellers as your one.
Well, he should be practicing with the team if he is, and from my understanding, he's not practicing.
No, he's not practicing. That's what I'm saying.
I think he knows what team he's going to. I think they've already contacted him. There are other teams that are looking at these other big-name quarterbacks that are in this draft. I think Spencer understands that maybe he's not in that group, but there's NFL scouts out there that have said this kid's got the arm, he's got the mental capacity for the game, and he can take a hit. He can tote that notebook for a year, 2 years, and be the quarterback that we need.
I still think.
And we can get him for a song and a dance. You go hire one, you go signing one of these other guys, Penix, what are you getting? The kids have 1 year, you know. Bo Nix, a head case, and everybody knows it. You know, Drake May, you know, who, where, you know.
What, New England, I don't want him.
Yeah, and then you go out and you get Williams out of Southern guy.
That's,
what have you done for me lately? Oh, you quit on your team.
That'll be so, Tom Carroll's team, the Bears.
So he quits on the team. Do I want a quitter on my team? No.
No, you don't. But for Spencer, and I hijacked your Tigers, I'm sorry. I apologize. For Spencer, you're one of them guys, you don't want to get drafted. You won't be free agent if you want me to tell you the truth.
Well, he
because that free agent, that salary cap money, he's a lot better off taking that little free agent money and working his way up into it. And I think that's what I'm saying maybe y'all – at Carolina, and maybe the Falcons, because, you know, new coach in Atlanta. I think that would be one of the teams, two of the teams I think he would probably go to, because they love Gamecock and Tigers anyway. So, but there again, that's down the road. That draft's what, the end of the month?
Yep.
So
coming up.
Back to your Tigers.
All right. Well, Clemson Terrell, thank you for that, but we're going to move on. Going a little bit of high school action, because in the legislature right now, there's a proposal that could change transfer and eligibility rules for high school sports here within the state as of right now. The first bill that's out, there's two of them. There's first bill that's out is going to allow private school students to try out for sports at local public schools. That was a request from some students that were made to lawmakers last fall. And under that bill, you know, they could move that transfer only if what am I trying to say? They're asking for the same eligibility as homeschoolers is what they're saying. So if the school doesn't offer a sport, they can go and try out for that sport at a public school, which I agree with. I think that's fine.
Understand.
And that would help the public school aspect of
Horse Creek Academy, prime example.
But it's still going to count as a 3-1.
Yeah, it still will.
Yeah, it's still going to be multiplier, yeah.
That goes along with that. Another floating idea, but not, you know, taken up at the point, would be creating a reciprocating public school student could try out for a team at a local private school if that school didn't offer those sports. And everybody's pretty sure that's probably going to be turned down, because there aren't too many private schools that offer a sport that a public school doesn't.
You're right.
To go along with it. So another bill that the senators are considering would make it easier for students to play sports after they transfer schools. That bill would just create two transfer windows that school students would be. One would be in August. Another one would be in January. And if students transfer schools during those terms, they would be immediately eligible to play sports at that new school. That's the one, you know, a lot of people are having issues with.
That worries me there.
I don't like that one, because you're going to have kids that are going to go to the powerhouses and play football, and then they're going to transfer out and go to another school to play a powerhouse
in
basketball, baseball, soccer, some other sport, and that. This is where it's got to be emphasized. you don't go to school to play sports.
Right.
You go to school to get your education. No, we're not. If you want to transfer, you can transfer, but you're going to sit out a year.
And that's exactly what.
If you're not going to do it as a senior, you're not going to do it as a junior. You're going to have to make up your mind as a sophomore if you want to stay in the same school. And then you're only going to have 1 year left to play if you go somewhere.
Well, guess who's lobbying for this rule, of course, is Great Collegiate, and their athletic director, Emily Hillwell, is the one that's there. Jerome actually stood up and said that would create a ping-pong effect with students, you know, transferring exactly like you said. So, you know, he's totally against it in this regard. But, you know, the proposal would nix the rules currently that are enforced by the high school league, which indicates support for tighter regulations concerning transfers, I think, with that proposal and what it would provide. So, the first one's a good possibility that it'll happen. It already does happen. We saw it with Dixie and Abbeville in wrestling.
We did.
And then Dixie got their own program up and running in that regard. And I think it forces other schools to kind of build a program. If you've got enough students that are going somewhere else because you don't have one, create one. And let's get that running. So I think that part of the bill is probably going to end up passing. But it'll be another month or two before they actually come down with all that.
I'm going to continue to applaud Jerome. Jerome, here's what I want to do. Next time you just see Great Collegiate on that thing, just tell them sit down. We're not going to listen to you this time. You quit with all this crap.
If you want to change, number one, to Great Collegiate, if you want to change the rules, go to Skeezer.
Yeah.
Get out of the high school league. We've been this organization for this many years. The rules that we have in place have worked for us for how many years? All of a sudden, you pop up and you want to get a lawyer and challenge every rule on the rule book.
They got a good lawyer. Give them that.
It's not going to happen. You got too many forces going against you.
I'll agree and applaud with that. So we'll follow along with it and get you more information as it comes along. Guys, the last thing I want to talk about here is what's going to be going on this week. The practice rounds began today. They first and foremost, let's applaud what happened in Texas with the champion there. First time that Batea was a champion at Augusta National, 10 years ago?
First year they had drop championship.
Yeah. So he won that, and here he is coming back now. He's the last competitor to win a spot in this year's Nationals.
And I just watching the way that finished, that was heartbreaking for both of them. Luckily,
particularly a shoulder that he.
Well, like I said, that right there is something you got to really worry about for him because it happens a lot. He says so. Luckily, his actual trainer was still on the course and had not gone to the restroom. He said. He's usually following the group just in case it does happen, but that's the first time of many. But that's not the last time you'll see a guy. Like I said, drive, chip, and putt started 10 years ago. He's the first guy to win it. He'll be the first guy playing in the Masters. I mean, you'll applaud that and then get a win. That's his, I think, second win on tour. I mean, it's incredible. But like I said, he's already there, I'm sure, today. And like I said, that amateur was really good. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed the weekend watching it on Saturday from there. And to see the two girls fight it out like they did and putt those greens the way they did, that was incredible. Yeah, I can't remember a professional ever birdieing 15, 16, 17, 18 to win it. After bogeying 14, 15 is a par five, but But to be a young lady to do it like Wodey did from Florida State, and like you said, a poor girl from Southern Cal that posted 4 hours early that had to sit there and watch her make that putt. She was just fresher and she ran out of holes. But all in all, great time. I think it's going to be a great weekend of Masters. You're always going to have a rain, Stan. It's just
it's the time of the year.
It's
going to be Thursday.
So I wonder, I got to check and see if they have rain delays at the pickle eating contest. I got to get my rain gear out to see. But it was funny, I put out my closet today. You and I were looking at the attire. And I was like, I didn't think I had anything left over. But yeah, I still got a vest that is a little bit small for me now. But we just were amazed at some of the prices on some of the merchandise down there. But if you're going, beer, sandwiches, and Cokes, been the same for 40, 50 years. They never going to change.
And that's the thing about the Augusta National, too. It's one of the many secrets that are down there is how cheap the food prices are.
It is.
Now, it cost you a fortune to get in, but what you
$18,500 this year for 4 days.
It's not going to cost you $5 for a bottle of water or anything. So.
$18,500 for 4 days is ridiculous for you know what? And I'm at the point now to where I think the golf, it would be better if they went away from the lottery where everybody lives in Augusta gets a ticket and go back to where I had to leave Troy at 4 or 5 in the morning to get down there to get in line to get a ticket. Mm-hmm. I can remember 4 o'clock in the morning parking at Hooters and walking up the street and getting in line, and dag blame if I thought I might be one or two. Nope. I looked around the corner and there they were, and I was like, man. And then I remember my grandparents live right up the street, so I learned I'd have to come from Troy a lot. But it'll be a good week, man. You can see some good golf. All the bets are on LIV guys, so I expect one of your picks to be a LIV guy. I will say
Well, there's a lot of them that are out there. Of course, John Rahm is the favorite at 12-1 as of right now.
That's a LIV guy.
Who everybody's talking about. You had Scotty Scheffler, who's been dynamite. Over the last couple of weeks.
He let me down the other week. I'm scared he'll have that week, too. But.
Yeah, but he's 4-1. Brooks Koepka is a 20-1 long
LIV
shot
guy.
Here. Yeah. My guy, Will Zalatoris, I think the haircut may do him good in this one, but he's 28-1 favorite. Cameron Smith, I love the way Cameron
LIV guy.
Plays. I love the way Cameron plays. 25-1. Joe Quinn Neiman.
Regular guy.
Yeah, 22-1. He's leading, you got Jason Day to go along with all that.
Oh, yeah.
His year, 2023, he came back, earned his playing spot. And Zonder Scheffler, added to his list of close calls and big events. Can he do it again?
Hey, you're leaving one off, man. I can't believe you're leaving off.
Jordan Spieth.
Rory McIlroy.
Well, I'm getting to Jordan. Oh, he's bad. There on the list.
Now, look, and I'm going to be, look, here's what I want to say from Jordan Spieth. If I'm not mistaken, the last two tournaments he's played, he's had a hole-in-one on a par three.
True, yes.
2 straight weeks, he's had a hole-in-one. Stan, which will it be? Will it be 13? Will it be 4? I mean, 16, excuse me. I don't think it'll be Jeeper. I don't think it'll be 6, but we'll see how it is. But he's playing better. And then Rory,
Rory's a 10-1 favorite as of right now. But
well, he got some local knowledge from Ben Martin yesterday.
Yeah, so. he wants to complete that Grand Slam.
And he needs it, Tom. I think once he does get it, I mean, he'll feel a lot better about life. But.
Then you got the guy from Japan, Hideki.
Matsuyama.
Yep. So
he's never out of it.
Never. It was 2 years ago he won?
No, it's been a little bit. It's been a couple
longer
years
than that.
Ago.
Yeah. Justin Thomas was another favorite. He won.
Jet T.
Yep. Go along with that. And then you got Wyndham Clark.
Yep, he's one of the upcomers that's been battling with Scotty Scheff a good bit
He
won U.S. Open last year, so he's won a major. So that's one thing to get out of play.
Everybody's saying he's a young Brooks Koepka. So.
I don't know if he puts that good, man. Brooks is big, like DJ, but he's just got, like, hands of, like, I don't know, like, I won't say lady hands, but he just can sit there and just putt lights out. And Brooks is a guy that – I liked all of these guys until they jumped ship and went over to the LIV. I do like what right here. Rahm is now calling for Greg Norman and LIV to be forced to play 72 hole tournaments. He sees what I've been seeing about playing 56 hole and calling it quits, and that's the reason they don't have the points that they need, and they're never going to probably get from the PGA to play in like your majors and stuff. And he sees the writing on the wall because he knows that tournament right there is the one that can change the law of golf. Because, like, I see where one of my favorite players, Bernard Langer, who at 70, 71, 72, could play with any of these guys. This was his last year at the Masters. He's got an injury, so he's not going to be able to play. So next year will be his farewell tour. And he said, hey, I want to be a starter. I want to be the one to get the boys off at 7 in the morning. I want to be the one to wake them up at 7 in the morning. So Bernard's always got some fun stuff out there. My dark horse is a guy you never heard of. It's Christo Leppenhark or something like that. He's from South Africa. He's a senior at Georgia Tech. He's 6'10".
Wow.
Wears a 15 shoe. But I started following him.
How long are those clubs? They got to be.
Well, no. The thing is, he uses a regular regulation clubs. He's only got an extra inch and a half on, like, his driver, and he doesn't even have anything on the wedges and stuff like this. So if you see the guy playing, he doesn't have a hurt back, but he should. But like I said, he's been playing decent, and he's only eligible because he won the British Amateur last year. But he's a senior at Tech, so he's getting a lot of love from Georgia people down there. He would be my dark horse. Like I said, he might not even make the cut, but we'll go over all that when we get under Thursday, and we hear what they're telling us when we get there. I'll ask Dale, who's your pick? He's probably going to tell me to move out that way. So we'll see, because I got more questions for him, too, by the way.
Yeah, we'll find out. Particularly, would he play on the LIV Tour?
I think we both agree he would, even though he knows I'm against.
All right, what about some of the changes that happened at Augusta that 13, they made? Man. And you look at 13-2. I mean, they lengthened 2 by what, about 15, 19 yards?
Well, Tom, 2 is the one that runs right along what used to be Burtman's Mill. They closed it off now, but it's a birdie hole anyway. What they did was they moved tee box. If they had pushed it all the way to the left, I mean, that tree line's down there. Unless you can draw a ball really well, and the problem with that would be you got bunkers way down there, too, to catch you. But Louis Oosthuizen, who won it with an eagle many years ago, he didn't get an invite because of the points. And that's what I'm saying. I thought that if you won a Masters, you were guaranteed a spot the rest of your life. But the way the point system worked, they didn't earn enough points, and that's why Liv's raising Cain about it. And it is sad for that, but, I mean, I guess you got to do what you got to do. But and then 13, they blinked in again, and that's one that Augusta Country Club, I think it's the 8th hole, golf hole number 8, right beside the tee box, and they moved it back. 14, what do you, have you got 14 yards, or is it 18, that they moved 13 back? That's going to be challenging because that's almost going to take driver out of some players' hands. And you need driver on a par 5. But like I said, the two changes are on par 5. So is it for scoring or is it for toughness that's going to bring Woods into play? Like 13, you hit a great drive and you just pull it a little bit. You in the little stream at Rays Creek. Pick it up when you get down by the pond, but a lot of those guys that had to hit out of there. Yeah. I'm talking about in the woods and the azaleas and stuff to avoid the stroke play. 13 is going to be a difficult hole anyway. But a guy like Tiger and some of the longer guys like Rory, you might even see a 2-iron off the tee just to get placement for it. They're willing to give up the eagle to get the birdie. So it's going to be a placement on that hole. And then, two, they're still going to bomb it down there. I mean, if you, like me, if you hit a slice like I do, I'm going straight up that left side. And I may have been a pine star on the other side, but there's no penalty over there. But like I said, that should be, even though it's been lengthened, it's still only probably, what's it say? What's number 2 lengthwise? Is it a half?
Oh, I don't have it.
Oh, never mind. That's fine. We'll look at it Thursday. Yeah. I'll probably look it up on my map right here.
Yeah, but they also played around with some of the greens as well.
They did.
and they made it more golfer friendly, I think.
I'm going to tell you right now. That's when I knew I couldn't play golf. When I actually could putt and chip pretty well, and then I putt on 14. I putt off 14. I chipped in the trap on 14. I chipped over the green on 14. I chipped on the green. It rolled off. And I just said, hey, the guy said, man, let's speed up play. Put it in your pocket. And so I took my 8. But 14 undulations, crazy, and that's one of the holes they did look at. They've taken what I call a soft front. Mm-hmm. It's where the hole would be right where your cup's at and stands right there. And that's how much room you got to stick it on that left side of that green. If you don't, it's 40 yards down the hill. And it's really unfair to have a hole placement like that. So they weren't on that one because they can still place it center, pretty much center of where it normally sits, and you'll be fine. But like I said, putting's, like I said, what those girls did Sunday, those guys won't do Sunday this week, I can tell you that. Well, it's going to be difficult. Let's just say that.
If I'm these caddies, I'm asking their caddies, those girls, exactly what they saw, what they hit.
I thought it was cool with the girls. Like I said, they're in college. I mean, most of them are around that 14 to 18 year old age group. So most of them have probably played their last, like the lady I was telling you about from LSU. But they took their dads, and they have caddies at Augusta National. Lee Trevino was famous for taking a local caddy and leaving his caddy at home. And he always called that vacation for his caddy. That was the week he got off because they didn't know what they knew in Augusta. And I had a good friend of mine, Dan Nelson, who caddied down there for a while. And just the knowledge you get from the guys is crazy. And you'll even have – even Rory, he's going to have his caddy, but he's going to have that guy right there at the practice round. You're going to say, who's that guy out there with Rory with his little caddy suit? But it's going to – like I said, this is going to be – and rain will dictate how the greens are. Yeah. I mean, if it rains a good bit, they're going to be slow. But if it comes out and the sun boils on Sunday or Saturday, they're going to pick up and it's going to be lightning fast. Plus, they can do what they want to anyway because they can water it down, heat it up, whatever they want to do, they can do it. And you got to see the azaleas from the road where we went by some of the houses and stuff down there like Jones Creek. You got to see what the azaleas are looking like. They're going to look better on that course. So
looking good. The question I got for you, does Tiger Woods finish these rounds? I mean, or this tournament for that matter. I mean, last 3-4 tournaments, he hadn't been able to finish.
Don't want to say this on air. I've seen some of the changes that he's made to his game. His diet. He's working on a lot more cardio and no sex before the tournament. That's the only way I know to say it.
Okay.
That was probably the one thing that killed him the rest of the times. Because you know, there are a lot of Waffle House around that place, but that's another story. But I think that's the one thing we're going to see. I think Tiger's that competitor, though. He's more worried about making cut, because if he can make the cut in this one, he's got like a part of history. Mm-hmm. So is it the mindset, do I just want to make the cut? And if he makes the cut, then he's got to roll it into another gear. He's had some injuries. But Tiger and Augusta, there's another one staying.
Yep.
I like Tiger at Augusta.
All right, so it should be fun. We'll dig into it as well. What you got?
One last thing. If you're a betting man, Vegas has already got the South Carolina women at plus 250 for next year's championship.
It is.
Take it now before it changes.
I'm taking the field. Taking the field. Because I was, like I said, one thing that I was worried about, because I didn't get to see the game, the game before, because it was on that other four-letter network that I can say, ESPN. But I didn't even see anything about the Cordoza, the injury at all, and then Willie texted me. That would have been the one thing that would have hurt them. And winning that game is if Cordoza didn't play, even though she didn't play that great. She missed a lot of layups. But all in all, I don't blame you, Stan. Go take that. You can take it. I'm going to sit back and wait and see who we got. I'm still a field man.
All right. For sure, we will be in Augusta this coming Thursday. Probably going to be at Hooters. More than likely,
I think
is where we'll be down there. So
I don't look for Daly. I don't know if he'll stay or not with the rain, but we'll see.
We'll find out. All right, I'm Tom Carroll, Chris Cox. That's the coach, Dan Spivey, and we are the Lakeland Sports Guys. Have a great week.